It's one of those late spring days when the world seems to be getting better. Puffy white clouds dot the blue sky. A gentle breeze ruffles the blue sea. The birds sing in the trees. It's how it always has been and always will be. The Westcliff seems to exist in that gap between land and sea and air, but also seems to have fallen through the gaps between the past and the future. Let's go in and have a biscuit with our coffee.
Hello, I'm Peter John Cooper. Today's tale from the cliff edge takes us forward into a time when everything here is, well, much the same as it is now. It's called Uberu, delivering missiles direct to you. Squadron leader Roger Barrett felt it was time for a coffee. So he muttered, "Coffee," and within a moment he could feel the rich, bitter, warming sensation coursing through his veins. "Ah, that's good," he said to himself, "damn fine coffee." This morning had been particularly trying. He had been tasked to take out a terraced house in... Well, actually, he didn't know where the terraced house was, not even which country. It was just one of rows and rows of terraces in his eyepiece. He had blinked his left eye a couple of times, and he saw the warhead from the drone disappear inside. And then, a few moments later, a gush of white smoke and debris told him that that particular delivery was complete. "Whoosh," he said to no one in particular, and moved on to his next task. A shopping centre, somewhere. This was more taxing, as he had to try and make the delivery with as little collateral damage as possible. Those shops were high-end jobs, with expensive decoration, and wouldn't appreciate getting their marble pillars scorched. As it happened, his delivery had been spot on, and the recipient had become part of the expensive decoration himself in an instant. Whoosh! For some reason, despite his successful morning, Squadron Leader Barrett was restless today. He had been restless for some time. There was something nagging at the back of his mind, something he should know about or remember. His room in the homely red brick block had a large picture window onto the West Cliff outside. The view was lately becoming obscured by the tall dark pines that had grown so much over the years that the tips formed a barrier between him and the sea. He loved the sea and sometimes secretly wished that he'd chosen a naval title for the job. Admiral Barrett or Commodore Barrett would have done very nicely. He sometimes flew a drone over the trees to watch the waves. But not this morning. That would take time away from the growing list of deliveries that needed to be completed if he was going to get paid at the end of the week. Money was deducted for every delivery he failed to make. He sighed, and without thinking much of it at all, demolished a small thatched cottage in a village somewhere before turning his attention back to the pines and those disturbing, sad, sad remnants of humanity he could see running around doing things in their shade. Quite what they had to do, or where they had to run, he couldn't imagine, and sometimes he did try to imagine, but it was beyond him. In any case, any of them could be due a delivery someday soon. War was war, and it didn't do to get involved. The trouble was, these days, you were never sure who the enemy was. I mean, you did know, but only because the enemy came up in the inbox on your targeting device. After the privatisation of the Army, Navy and Air Force, the fighting troops all became employees of one or other of the corporations, mostly American, that were tasked to offer violence according to the vague guidelines of war the government sought to lay down. Of course, it wouldn't do for the government to be seen to influence the actions of these corporations in any way. Barrett believed fervently in the free economy and that the government had no right to interfere with business. They were only there to make sure that nothing hindered the rights of these corporations to engage the enemy and to flourish financially. Jobs relied on that, and certainly his did. The best way to maximise corporate profits and his wages was to maintain a high level of fear and distrust. Discord was an essential part of the economic model that had been laid down and followed for 200 years. I mean, he'd been taught that in primary school. Good could only come from competition. Competition meant, ultimately, war, the one he was engaged in, and which they were calling World War III. But Barrett had anxieties of his own. He couldn't help considering how, even in his short time, career opportunities in the services had lessened as more operatives became part-time and finally entirely outsourced altogether to be home workers. He regarded himself as something of a history buff and had once even read a book on World War II, but the idea of a full-time uniform army quite baffled him. And indeed, the title he was allocated only referred vaguely to his activities. He could as well have chosen Admiral or Brigadier General when he ticked what was his preferred title in his application to Uberu delivering missiles direct to you, that he now worked for. Being a delivery operative didn't pay well, but it went some way to supplementing his ever-dwindling pension. He never thought to query where the missile was to be delivered. The only stipulation was that there should be as little collateral damage as possible. After all, nobody had paid for the neighbours to be deleted. But because of some inner pride in his job and because of the meagreness of the recompense, he made sure the missile was always delivered somewhere, even if he wasn't necessarily 100% certain that that was the correct front door. Neither did it ever occur to him to ask where the orders originated. He knew it was one of those corporations like GCHQ Enterprises, the listening agency, or the Halliburton CIA Corp, we have a finger on all the triggers, or maybe the Russian or Chinese equivalents that paid government ministers for their rights to operate. All he needed to understand was that the better he carried out his deliveries, the more work there would be in the future. An anonymous delivery at a random address would provide a high level of fear and distrust in the neighbours. Sooner or later, that would result in more orders. Fragmentation referred not only to the effect of the weapon itself, but also to the dislocation of the elements of civil society it was aimed at. There were others, something like him, out there delivering the rationale for the war, adjusting the stories to fit the necessities of the fight. He was just a tiny link in a chain, a network that made sure the world didn't become overly complacent and self-satisfied. That never again would the economics of the world depend upon friendships and human networks. "There is no such thing as society," was the mantra that had been drummed into him many years ago. And he was now doing his small, very small part in keeping it that way, waging the vital war against the social misfits, because, left alone, people did have this unfortunate habit of coagulating into groups and crowds and societies, and this was not to be tolerated. Peace and love would mean the end of the economy and the cessation of what little work he did have. So it was in everyone's interest that delivery should continue accurately and on time. He glanced out of the window again. "They are fools," he thought. Indeed, sometimes he found it difficult to believe that they were members of the human race, his own race, at all, and he had a positive suspicion that all that running about and doing things meant they were all up to no good. He hated them, as he should, for that otherness. But he had an odd desire to find out what they found to do all the time, what interested them. He wondered if any of them had read a book as he had and understood the necessity and inevitability of conflict as he did. And he had a rather gruesome feeling that he wanted to unhook himself, go down there and converse with them, to shake them thoroughly, to understand why they persisted with this distasteful way of thinking. Why on earth did they need other people to do their thinking for them? Why did they need to be part of something else? Why couldn't they make up their own needy, stupid minds? Why couldn't they all just grow up? Like him. He sighed. No time for such filthy thoughts. He must get back to work. Whilst he was mostly content with his life at present, he worried about the future. Weren't the government being a bit soft, letting those people run about in the shade of his pine trees on his Westcliff? He sometimes had nightmares of the world entirely out of control, where the runners and doers ran about its surface like ants and cockroaches, doing whatever it was that ants and cockroaches found it so important to do in their revolting masses and crowds, like crawling under bushes to sleep and lighting little campfires to sit round in groups, singing and barbecuing whatever revolting detritus they found to eat. He shuddered again. Why should they be having such freedom whilst he was working his fingers to the bone, pressing buttons? Whoosh! Whoosh! One day, Somebody might write a book about World War III that would explain it all. And he might even read it himself. And sometimes he felt a wistful melancholy that his job isolated him from the world outside. The nicer parts of the world outside, the bits that weren't already totally wrecked by the enemy. He had not actually smelled the sweet odour of the pines for a number of years past. He had everything he wanted in his life, apart from the sweet scent of the pines and the soft susurration of the surf at the foot of the cliff. He thought how unfair it was that the runners and doers actually had the scent of the pine trees in their nostrils all the time they were out there. It seemed grossly unfair that the social misfits had that piece of exquisite luxury whilst he beavered away, keeping the world a place for them to run and do in. A pine. Now, he muttered as he shivered. The sweet pine scent filled his room, but still it did not quell his rising anxiety. It smelled metallic and artificial, like lavatory cleaner. He gagged. Oh, disgusting. No more. Oh, these people. Subhuman. In some frightening way, they were like the drones he controlled, crisscrossing the West Cliff as his drones crisscrossed the world. He and his many colleagues in working for Uberoo deliveries. But these creatures out there on the cliff edge, what were they? How dangerous could they be? Who was controlling them? Did the politicians know about them? Could the government be trusted to keep this enemy in check whilst he, Barrett, was getting on with earning a living? He hated them all. Hate and distrust was what kept the world spinning round. He could destroy the whole lot at a whim, and then he would be at peace to savour the pine trees and their scent in quiet. Oh, good. He nearly worked his way through the morning list. Just one more task, the final one, before he could have lunch and get a little rest. He made one last effort to concentrate. The drone, flying across the sea. Ah, the sea. You didn't need to hate the sea in the way you did humanity. You could be alone and at peace on the great, wide, rolling sea. He spent some time hypnotized by the little glittering wave tops and the green depths beneath. He should have ticked the box saying, Admiral, Admiral Barrett. He snapped his attention back to the job. The drone was closing in on a pretty little bay with a cliff top lined with dark pine trees. Closer they came, closer. He could almost smell the pine. And amid the pines, a red brick block with a big picture window. His heart lifted from its gloom. The last one before lunchtime. He pressed the button, and the warhead streaked towards its target. Whoosh! I hope you found today's tale from the cliff edge thought-provoking and not too disturbing. If you were disturbed by it all, just remember that whatever happens, this pine-scented haven will always be here. Well, at least until global warming means the sea begins to nibble away at the cliffs.